Hi, everyone, and welcome to Intuitive Awakening. My name is Dina. Thank you so much for joining me today on this podcast. Today, I'm going to have my lovely co-host, Erin, join me on this call to discuss some very interesting topics. Erin is a Reiki practitioner. He is an energy healer and an energy reader. Say hello to everybody, Erin.
Hey, everyone. Glad to be back.
Thank you for joining me. So, everyone, a couple of months ago, I had the opportunity to meet this author. Her name is Bryn Blankenship, and she wrote this book called The Limitless Soul. I asked her a number of questions, and at the time, I hadn't had the opportunity to read the text in full. However, it is along the same lines of Michael Newton's work, and she has studied with him. If you are familiar with this author, he has written the following books, Destiny of Souls, Journey of Souls, and I know there's another one that for some reason I'm kind of blanking on right now. I think it's called Memories of the Afterlife, Life Between Lives, Stories of Personal Transformation. I think there are actually multiple authors in that book. However, she is one of them, and she has worked very closely with him over the years to perform hypnoregression and has kind of created her own specific technique called soul expression spiritual regression that she focuses on in the book to help people tackle some very difficult situations in their lives, to overcome challenges and obstacles, and really just to get some insight into their own lives. If you hear thunder in the background, it's storming like crazy over here right now. So this topic is massive to tackle today. We probably won't have the opportunity to tackle it all, so we'll do our best to review topics that we kind of found the most helpful for ourselves and just think that they will be applicable to everyone else. So I will kick it off, Erin, with the first topic, which is about restriction versus freedom. And this is the story, I believe it's the first chapter, but it could be the second. This is the story of a woman by the name of Lo Ming, and she, through her regression, found out or discovered that she was a geisha in a previous life, and unfortunately became, can we say the word? Is prostitute probably the best word?
I think that's 100% accurate.
Okay. She became a prostitute. Unfortunately, she was shipped over with a bunch of other geishas into San Francisco. And essentially was trapped in this, I don't know, what do we call it? It's not like a Madden's house. Like, there's a word. I can't even think of the word. It's a brothel, type
pretty place. Pretty much. She was, pretty much we can also say she was just a prisoner.
Yes, she was a complete prisoner in this brothel. And, meaning that she was at the behest and control of this man who owned all of these, quote unquote, geishas who were just there to forcibly have, sex with other, customers. And unfortunately, she was trapped inside the house and she couldn't leave. She didn't speak the language and she was just trapped. And the only way that she could get freedom was through really a pregnancy that led to her death. And, Erin, when I read about this story, it really ticked me off because... Yeah. The lesson from that life was that she chose to learn the lesson of freedom, but she could only learn this through very extreme circumstances, pretty much under living a lifetime of extreme restriction. And I just wonder how you kind of felt about that when you read that. Do you think that type of life is required to understand a lesson?
With all the readings and stuff that I've done, and reading this chapter was hard. It was early on. So, and I've read other stories of, experiences. So I don't think it kind of hit me as much just from the other readings that I've had. But at the same time, just having a life like hers, where literally she was imprisoned and isolated, and the only interaction she had with anybody was, pretty much through this, I want to say inadvertently being raped. Me, just from like my own readings that I've had about past life things and experiences, I am the type of person that cannot stand being controlled. And by controlled, I also mean like held prisoner or someone trying to force you to do something that is out of your power. So when I was reading this, it was really hard to just kind of just grasp the concept of living a life where all I saw were four walls. I could only stare out of a window, and the only interaction with a human being was, you know, when they came to do the deed. And I can't really imagine how that, and I know it happens, but I can't imagine how that really is a lesson that people or spirits would choose. It's very hard. Unfortunately for her, it wasn't a very long life, but at the same time, it's unfortunate that she wasn't able to experience life. And another thing that kind of hit me was, I think she was actually in San Francisco, and I'm based in the Bay Area. So it was kind of like, holy crap, that's only a 40-minute, you know, drive from me. And who knows, that may actually still be going on, probably is still going on to this day. So like for an experience like that, like, and to learn, you know, a lesson in that way, I just couldn't do it. Like my soul, just being me and knowing how I am and experiences that I've gone through, I would probably end up going insane or committing suicide. I don't know.
I totally agree. Cause when I was reading this story, the anger in my chest, I could just feel the anger and the fact that she was so powerless to do anything, really. I mean, yes, she probably could have jumped out the window and said goodbye. You know, that's probably what I would have done. I would have just tried to jump out and escape in, you know, some sort of crazy way regardless. But I just feel that to learn the lesson of freedom, do we need to really understand what restriction means and feels like, and actually experience that? Do we really know that? Because you could also say, well, in a previous lifetime, I chose to be a slave so that I could really learn what true freedom was. And I don't know if that sits well with me.
Right. No, I agree. And this is going to be a very loose example, but like just me growing up, I was pretty sheltered, and it wasn't like anything close to what Loming went through, but you know, I was sheltered and I didn't really know, you know, too much about the world. And until I went off to college, and that's where all of a sudden I was like, oh, we can do, you know, this, or we can do that. So, I mean, I do know what it's like to, you know, have someone kind of control your every aspect in a way. And I'm sure you have similar experiences. So like, just to think of like the little amount of, I would say control, well, a little amount of being controlled by like my parents as a child, compared to how her entire life was controlled. She also, you know, trained as a geisha, so they had a certain belief system that didn't allow her to really think, you know, hey, maybe I can get out of this place, you know. And so I can understand on a soul level, you know, again, just from all the readings and things that I've kind of understand and how we're supposed to learn lessons, I get it. But at the same time, I just think that's like, why do we have to go through such a harsh lesson such as that just to learn something?
I totally agree. And on an intellectual level, I can understand why a soul would choose that, because, you know, being in a situation that you are completely rendered powerless, then yes, you would probably learn to value freedom more. But I think that going through that type of lifetime, you know, that can, I feel like lifetimes like that really leave a very dark imprint on the soul. And I don't know how after that, after you pass away and cross over, you're like, yippee, I learned the lesson, you know?
Like, okay, great. Let's go on to the next one. Maybe I'll, you know, I don't know, be a fish, but
exactly.
In a fish tank. No, but yeah, it's a very harsh life. I couldn't imagine doing that. And I mean, you know, just, And actually, it's funny because the room that I have at my current quarters is literally like four walls. So I feel like half the time it's very dark. So I feel like sometimes it's, you know, sometimes I'm in a cage, especially when I wasn't working and I wasn't leaving the house every single day. It does really kind of like, you know, makes you depressed and messes with your psyche, I feel. So the fact that she couldn't even go out and she couldn't even socialize, you know, the only time she was doing that when men came to pretty much take advantage of her and call her all these horrible names.
Exactly. It was a very, very dark story. And as we've already kind of said, it's very I really wonder sometimes about the state of our soul and how smart it is on the other side to choose, you know what I mean? To choose this. I really wonder, you know, on the other side, am I in kindergarten and I'm being manipulated, or am I advanced? I'm pretty sure it's neither one of those, but.
Right.
Okay. Because we have so much to tackle. We're going to move on to just kind of reviewing some interesting, I don't even know what to call them, lessons, topics, bits of information that we found from another individual story. I believe it falls into chapter 4, if anybody's interested. Again, the book is called The Limitless Soul. And there were some tidbits in that chapter that had, I think, both Aaron and I just thinking about incarnation in general and just about our souls. And, you know, there was one section, and I'm going to reference the pages because I think it'll help people if they're really interested in looking at this book, that we found on page 49, talking about the fact that today on the planet, older souls are having to incarnate today with the younger souls to kind of maintain and strengthen balance on the planet. So what do you think they're talking about there, Aaron?
Well, that's a good question. And you know, we've had, just for the viewers, me and Deanna have had a couple of conversations on this. And I mean, it's the strength and the balance. I mean, first off, if we're having to do that, there has to be a lot of negative events, negative occurrences, and negative souls out there to cause this. So, I mean, I know, you know, we're here in the U.S. and there are some things going on here, you know, it's, you know, with politically, I should say, but there are other countries who have some horrible things going on that a lot of people here in the U.S. I think are not even aware of. And so I feel like that's what it's aiming towards, and kind of like, it's not just what's happening within us. It's as a whole, everything everywhere that we may not even see is kind of going to the crapper, just because there's, you know, everybody, especially in this day and age, it's so much about, you know, we have to work. We have so much to think about. There's all this technology and, you know, people don't really take time to, for one, you know, think to take care of themselves, but two, to help other people just for the sake of helping them. So I think what that's referring to is we need to just kind of make sure that people are going more into the light than the other direction. If that makes sense.
Yes, it definitely makes sense. And we kind of also found some other pieces of information that we should mention associated with this whole idea of older souls having to, you know, kind of come back to Earth to help maintain this balance. So we learned from this guy's hypnoregression in chapter 4 that not all old souls, are actually good souls. There are old souls that have actually led people towards a lot of negativity, a lot of hatred. They have really created a lot of fear in the world in general. You know, some souls just choose evil as we see today. So I guess I have a question in mind that if some souls are having to come back to maintain this balance, and I'm assuming, as you kind of alluded to, this balance towards good and evil, don't you find it odd that the older souls sometimes still gravitate towards negativity?
I do. I mean, it makes sense if they don't choose good or evil. And I mean, going back to the conversation we had previously about, you know, God's experiences, like it kind of makes sense to me with that concept. But at the same time, it also made me question, like, what, you know, everything that we've learned with the spirituality and, you know, it's always supposed to be about the good. But then from reading this, it kind of stunned me a little bit to think that, okay, there are soul groups that are designated to kind of, I guess, choose evil. But does that mean on the other side are those evil souls? Like, I'm wondering that as well, because, you know, it says in that same paragraph that not all souls are good, right? So
right.
If people are being led to hatred and such, like, are they here so that they can test the younger souls to see, hey, are they gonna learn and grow and go towards the light, or are they gonna, you know, choose the dark and go in that direction? It's like that's something I really do wonder, and why that purpose is, because this is the first time that I've heard about anything of this concept. So it was very, very shocking to me.
You know, I also wonder too, I've had the belief in the past that some souls who okay, I have this belief that this is kind of like a theater and we all have roles and we're playing, you know, a theatrical piece. So we're at a play and here's the story. Some stories, you know, that you watch on display are horror stories. Some are love stories. Some are comedies, etc. However, you know, I kind of get the impression that most of us learn through fear. Unfortunately, most of us learn through some sort of tragedy, but that tragedy and that fear couldn't come unless a soul would choose to play that the darker role.
Right.
So if they are incarnating as a quote unquote dark individual or to play those roles, then as you said, when it's time for them to cross over, are they stuck in that so-called gray space or do they move towards the light because they completed their end of the bargain? You know?
Yeah. Oh, that's a good question. I don't know. I'll have to figure that one out. But I mean, it makes sense. If these souls and or soul groups, let's say, are designated to be those evil people or those evil, you know, entities, I guess you could say, I don't know what you want to call it, but is that their sole purpose to cause this chaos and upheaval so that way others can learn? Is, you know, and, you know, are they going to advance by causing a war? Or are they going to advance by, you know, causing genocide? Like, is that an achievement for them on the other side once they cross?
I don't know. It's such a big question because, you know, this is the planet of duality, light and dark, for a purpose. So it has to have, you know, some sort of bigger purpose, but maybe it becomes a problem when the soul was only contracted to commit a couple of so-called crimes and then maybe they become so attracted to it that they just continue and then that is wrong. I mean, I don't really know.
Right. It did kind of seem like that's what it was referencing, like, you know, the older souls that are evil, you know, and the older souls that are good are both kind of competing for these newer souls to see what direction they go into. And I mean, it just from reading it, I'm thinking, okay, the purpose of that possibly is that they can choose where their soul direction is going. Because if they're in, you know, a new soul, and just like, you know, humans, when they're younger, they're very impressionable. And, you know, things that they see people do, they'll replicate. So if they're seeing an older soul do something, they're going to replicate that. And then that might be the direction that their soul ends up going for future incarnations. Which can kind of be scary to think about. But I mean, even from readings that I've had, like I've heard of some things that I've done that have not been so good. And, you know, things that have happened to me in my life now are because I'm having to fulfill or balance out that karma. So I can kind of see how that is. But of course, in this life, like I'm not nowhere near that. So yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting concept.
Definitely. Well, we could probably spend quite a bit of time talking about that. So, and I know we're going to address it again shortly. So I just wanted to reference two other things that we kind of learned from this guy's regression, and you guys can read more about it in chapter 4, but there were just some little pieces of information that we both found to be enlightening or informative. So there was one thing on page 50 where there was a reference to the fact that there have been, and I think we've all seen this, so-called purges on Earth. Purges meaning that massive portions of the population all of a sudden are eradicated off the earth, either through, you know, wars, plagues, other sorts of illnesses, even natural disasters as well. But when we have those purges that happen on the planet, in this chapter, it is said that new souls are created to make up the gap. And yes, old souls are still coming to maintain the balance, but the whole idea that new souls are created to make up now this missing population on the planet, what do you think is meant by that?
Well, that was interesting to me because I know we chatted about that too, is that I thought souls, you know, I was saying that I'm like, okay, great, souls, they're all new, like they're new souls, but is it just that they're incarnating from maybe another planet into here? First off, that was my question. Like, where do these souls come from? And why are they still being created if, I don't know, if we have these soul groups and such, but the concept of them coming to cause balance, I guess it's because if there's so many souls out there that are, you know, learning these lessons and they're advancing, then we need some younger souls to, I guess, I don't know, get, I guess, like, cause that uncertainty and still cause the chaos for the older souls to be able to learn lessons that maybe a little bit more advanced. I don't know.
I don't know either. And so the whole fact that they are being created, that was my question as well, because are they, does that mean that they are new just to the planet, as you said, which is what I kind of thought, but then are they being created elsewhere in the universe and then being asked to come here? Like, I don't know if I understand that. I mean, why do they need to keep coming?
Right. I mean, I know we have a lot of, you know, more, I guess, more population, but I would think through the entirety of, you know, humans, we probably would have enough souls that can cover everything.
I feel that too. It's already overpopulated, but I guess it's been a long time, Aaron, since we've had a purge.
Yeah. Well,
we haven't had plague in a while.
I mean, ideally that wouldn't happen, but you never know. I mean, we don't know what the plans are for our future and the universe. And I mean, I know through readings, I've learned bits and pieces of information on what potentially can happen, but I'll leave that for another conversation.
Well, let's just hope the rats keep themselves in check and don't bring plague around for a little while. So Aaron, there was something that you had a question about on page 73 in the book about where we choose to be incarnated. So I'll let you kind of tackle that.
Yeah. So in that, I believe that's a different story. But one of the topics that just kind of really got me was it's that souls have a choice of where to be placed to help the advancement of society, and they have the choice to help humans help in human form or in spirit. So that I was just kind of wondering, like, what shifts first off, like, are happening, and why have we, you know, that are happening now, and why have we chosen it to incarnate? Just because it was talking about divine order, and if there's an imbalance, then obviously it's not good, I guess, for the universe. So, you know, what shifts do you think this might be referring to now? And because obviously all of us here and everyone who's listening is here for a reason, to help shift the, I guess, the balance into a more positive light, ideally. But what's happening now that's good, that we're here to fix? Why do we need to be here? What's the problem?
Exactly. You know? And like you said, you know, prior to your incarnation, you are specifically choosing the area of, you know, the world that you want to go into to help in some way. Unless you're the darker soul, you're going to help in a totally different way. But otherwise, you're here to help advance society, move forward in one direction. You know, we're individuals, so we can only tackle so much. We have to pick one thing and focus on that. But why are we choosing these places? What is it about your certain location that you're at that enables you to do the thing that you came here to do? Because we're all supposedly, and I shouldn't be saying that word, we all came equipped with the tools that we need. We have everything we need inside of us. Yes. So that we can help, you know, shift humanity forward. And I wonder about that, Aaron, though. I'm going to let you give your answer, but I can only say for myself that being a military brat, I lived all over the world. So I feel like for me, the traveling, being able to pick up and get up and go will somehow have, there's a reason for it later on in my life, but I haven't yet felt like I have been effective in any of the places that I've been at. So I don't know that, you know, I'm here to shift anything. I have yet to see that for myself because of the unpredictability of my life and where I've lived. Right. So I can't say that specifically, but in the United States though, like, for example, right, if you're born in the US, what is it about the country that will enable you to do what you need to do? So how do you kind of feel about that?
I mean, I don't know, because obviously, you know, I was born here. I'm in California. I was born here for a reason. I moved to the Bay Area for a reason. But at the same time, like, I don't know what that is. I don't know how me being here in the U.S. has, you know, an effect on the, I guess, greater order of things. And of course, in, you know, being in San Francisco area, like, I don't even like to go to the city first off. So, like, I'm not sure why I'm even here, but it's kind of where I've kind of created my adult life, and I've been here 12 years. And anytime I think about moving somewhere else, I just never do, because I think I'm more of a homebody and I kind of stay within my comfort. And maybe that's part of it too, is I need to be here and maybe it's prepping me for the larger thing I'm supposed to do later on. Maybe I might just, you know, meet this person who's going to be, I don't know, president or this big movie star. I don't know, just throwing out random things that will be an influencer to somebody else, you know? So yeah. I don't know, but it's just, you know, we all know things are shifting. I hear that, but I've never really read anything or I've heard anybody else say, oh, this is exactly why we need to shift. It's just all that we need to shift towards the light. We need to, you know, the veil is thinning. Okay. But why, you know, that is my question. Why, what is the purpose of everything?
Exactly.
It comes down to. But, and then also the question I'm wondering, because that same section goes into the idea of like, we all have our own sets of skills, and I'm wondering what my skills are. Like, how does me being like, again, I'm a Capricorn. I'm, you know, the ideal of a Capricorn where I like to have a plan and order and all that. Like, what does that have to do with this larger scale of the divine universe? I don't know.
No, I completely understand. I think that most of us, I think this is a question that I probably get, and I'm sure you do too, when you're reading clients, people wonder like, well, why am I here? You know, what did I come here to do, and how can I help, and what are my talents? I think this is the universal common question that we all really have. I mean, even if you're 60 or 70, you're probably still asking yourself that question because right. you feel lost, or because you know that you have gone somehow intuitively, you know that what you're doing is not what you're technically supposed to be doing. I think we all kind of know that, but this whole idea of the veil thinning, I've heard this from my guide as well. He pretty much said, and this was about 5 years ago when he told me this, he said, well, people are beginning to wake up now, as they should, right. and they're able to wake up because the veil is thinning, meaning that information that we couldn't access before, because I guess that barrier between this world and the next, it was only accessible to certain individuals. And I don't know why that was, but now it's accessible to all. It's becoming more accessible to all because it's easier to access in some way, whether it's all of a sudden your gifts have been activated for some reason overnight, your intuition is heightened, something has happened. There has been some sort of shift to make this happen. It's like the vibration of the earth is changing or something like that.
Right. Well, let me ask then. So, because as you know, and this is kind of going a little bit sideways off the topics we have here. But so in previous readings that I've had, because I've had a few specific past life readings, not regressions, but readings, just because I wanted to know specific things. And in a couple of them, I have actually been, I was told that I was like a monk of some sort, of a very exalted monk that was very spiritual and devoted myself to God. I've been told I was, you know, kind of like a shaman. Recently, the one I had was, I was kind of like a nun of some sort, but I ended up being gifted with a lot of, you know, abilities, and even had the ability to communicate with ET energies and heal and plant medicine, all sorts of stuff. And so in this life, which of course, you know, there's obviously a trend for me in at least a few past lives, but in this life, like, I didn't open up, or I didn't even think about actually pursuing anything until maybe 5 years ago. And of course, I feel like I've kind of gone pretty far in those 5 years, but like in those other lives, it was like, oh, this is what you were, these were your gifts, you were very powerful in that lifetime, blah blah blah. But you know, so in this incarnation, I guess I'm more so speaking for other people, like, do you think the fact that, you know, that I have had lives like that, that it opens me up a lot quicker in this life, or it opens me up more, or I come in more equipped? Like, how do you think of that?
That's a solid question. I think, truthfully, okay, I have a couple of questions about this myself. All right, I've thought about this, because first and foremost, like you said, there's a blueprint. Before you make it here, you're with your council, you're with the elders, and you're creating this blueprint for the new life. And that blueprint does include what your skill set is going to be, right? So maybe in this right. lifetime, you're going to focus specifically on healing, and that's going to be your biggest, we can call it gift, when you come to this planet. However, you know, I have some questions, just because I've also read that you bring with you what you have learned from previous lives. You carry yes. all of that with you.
Yes.
Right. So I imagine that if you have learned let's say, to be a clairvoyant then, or medium or what have you, that would also be a part of the package. But that, I don't know that that is so anymore, because you have this blueprint that says, well, here is what you're going to use, etc. Even though you have mastered the other ones, it doesn't mean that you're allowed to bring them into this lifetime, I think. But I don't know.
Yeah, because that reminds me, you know, of I think it may be that the same story where it says that the soul creates a suit. It's like an energetic suit within the body that has all the memories that you need. So, like, I'm wondering if that suit is, like, what we tap into when we do readings, like, or when we're you know, meeting people. Like, you know, they say there's somebody you might have in your soul group that when you meet them, you just have that feeling. So I'm wondering, is that part of that? Like, I've never heard about this suit before. So that was one of the things that definitely caught my attention as I was reading this chapter about all the choices and stuff that we can go, or the choices of where we can incarnate into.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it really could be that within your energetic field, if you want to call it the birthday suit or whatever, that within that is encoded your capabilities, like your psychic abilities, your healing abilities, what have you. I think there's kind of this energetic map that we have. And within that, it definitively shows what our strengths are, what we kind of brought with us. And maybe at certain parts of our lives, it becomes something triggers it and it becomes activated all of a sudden, or maybe we just open up or what have you. But I don't know that I really know, because speaking for myself, so as you know, for my last reading, I liked it and I didn't like it, because my guide has told me, well, you've already mastered these other things that you want now. You mastered them in previous lives, so you don't really need them anymore. You don't need to use them, and you don't need them because you already know you have learned how to do it, and you have already mastered it. But obviously I didn't bring them forward in this lifetime. So it's kind of a strange thing. I don't know that I have the full understanding, to be honest. And I'm unhappy about that.
Right. No, I get it. I mean, I'm, you know, shifting actually right now with the things that I do spiritually. And it's funny, because as I think about it now in this moment, like that suit, I feel like maybe that's what helps me in my practice. Cause as I mentioned yesterday, it's been a couple of months since I've actually done any healings. And then yesterday I went back to the fair, and I'll be honest, I didn't have time to prep in the morning. I just kind of went in, I did my, you know, whatever I need to do to set the space. And then all of a sudden, as I was, you know, doing healings on people, it was like I hadn't even taken a break. And I think I just was also in the mindset of, you know what, it's been a while, but let me just go into it. And everything just came like as if I hadn't even taken a break. So, I mean, this, whatever that energetic suit is, maybe, you know, what helped me to heal these people. Because I was actually like, okay. I was nervous because I hadn't done a reading in about 2 or 3 months, but now I'm getting back on my feet. But yeah, well, so anyway, maybe we should go on to the next topic, because otherwise we can keep going.
Yes, I'll let you go ahead and lead that topic.
All right, so the next one is one that I like to talk about often, as you know, but it's about money box and poverty consciousness. This one is about a woman named Linda, who in her present life, she pretty much was at mercy of other people for money. So like her husband, when they were married, and then they got divorced, and then afterwards, once they were divorced, then she had to rely on her children. And so through regression, she had learned that she had relied on other people in past lives for money as well. Another lesson, so in correlation to that, she had pretended to be other people that she wasn't in previous lifetimes. So for example, she had a life where when the Americas were first forming, she was very smart. She was the only child. And so her father taught her to read, which at the time was kind of forbidden for women, just because, you know, they were considered property and things. So she actually became very smart. She's very business minded. And she was pretty much not necessarily sold, but, you know, there's a more wealthy person that was very interested in marrying her. So she said, great, let's do it, even though she wasn't in love with him. And she ended up becoming an advocate for the Americas, and because there was war brewing, and she did not like the English. So she, because she was smart, she knew how to read, was able to pass on financial information. And actually, it says in the book, course, we don't know how true this is, but she actually helped pass on information to Thomas Jefferson and Ben Franklin to help America and help America fight the English. So through that, she had, she had relied on other people. She was kind of two-faced, not because she wanted to, but because that's what she had to do to survive. In her current life, she also had to do the same thing where when she got married, she started having children. She had to stop working, and she gave all of her attention to her children versus, doing what she really wanted to do. And not saying she didn't want to take care of her children and care for them and help them heal, but it wasn't right for her soul. You know, she felt like she needed to take care of herself. And so it was her that felt that, once she divorced and she was poor, she was like, crap, I can't get money. I need money. She didn't have experience to make the money to survive. And so she had to rely on others. So the lesson here, long story short, is that, she was holding on to the money so tight, or holding on to the idea of it and being so worried that she couldn't obtain it, that it was actually a block for her to be able to attract money. Deanna, I'm going to ask you a question. So from your experience, how have you been able to attract money, or maybe not attract money, just from the lesson that this unfortunate lady had to learn, because she, didn't go out and wasn't able to go out and make her own money. She had to rely on others.
Well, I think, for most of us, our beliefs about money come from our parents. Yeah. And how they manage it, how they have spoken about it, etc., really have, it's really influenced, I think, not just for me, but for everybody, how we manage, talk about, feel about, think about money, unfortunately. And I think sometimes it's, even if your parents don't speak about it, it's through osmosis. I mean, I think just being in the same household.
Because you see it, you experience it. And, I shared with you many times, I didn't grow up in the most rich of households, and my parents, we're divorced, and of course that's when things started to kind of go a little bit awry. But I was the youngest child, and so I just kind of saw it as it was, and I was like, okay, great. Like, when we have money, this is where the money goes. We can't go out and have a field day. But at the same time, I realized, at least in my 20s, once I started to work, that money is it, and I had to teach myself this, of course, through readings and just my own manifestations and what I had to learn through that. That, you definitely have to work for it, but I've learned that I can at least manifest money to get by. I won't say it's like great. Now I have a decent job, and it was a lot of work, but I had to stop thinking negatively about money, because I always thought money gets you this, money gets you that. And once I kind of just said, you know what, I have what I have, and I'm not going to get in the way, and I'm going to do what I need to do. And I kind of started to really learn how to manifest it, and save money and go on vacations. As you know, I'm the best at manifesting a vacation. Don't know how, yeah. But if I want to go somewhere, I will get that money, and it will just land in my bank account, and I'm off. But I do believe that when you say I don't have money, or I can't afford money, or I can't do this, or I can't do that, I really, really believe, from my experience, is that it sets your mind up, your own psyche up, to believe that that's not something that you can get or something that you can obtain. Of course, it's not going to come instantly. You have to put some effort, plant those seeds, but it is definitely obtainable, especially now. Like, maybe 100 years ago, not so much, but nowadays there's so many ways, so many resources. You just have to put out the effort.
I mean, I do agree with that. And I think, to be perfectly honest, going along the same lines as to what you're saying, this belief about being positive about it and kind of creating it in your mind first, you have to subscribe to the notion that, again, that you are an actual creator, and that what you think that you can actually bring in, that you can actually materialize. Right. So there is that belief system that has to be changed in a way if you believe in the law of attraction. But if you have grown up and your whole life has really been the fact that you've been chasing money your whole life, telling someone, well, you're just being negative, that's why you're not getting it. Ugh, I could never, I don't say that to someone because it would just piss me off.
Yeah.
It would anger me, because you don't really know somebody's circumstances, and you also don't know what their lesson is supposed to be around money in general, right?
Yeah. So yeah, that goes into, I think we were talking about this yesterday, goes into, you know, what about people who have their soul or their purpose in life to come in for, you know, maybe they're homeless, like that also, that actually does sometimes, you know, I think about that, like, why did this person's soul choose to go through this experience? You know, why did they choose to not have that money? Like, that is that a contract? Is that something that they just chose to all of a sudden start, you know, for lessons in their lives? I don't know.
I don't know either. I think it is a choice, though, because I know my guy told me a long time ago that in one lifetime I was a beggar on the streets, and it was a rough and an extremely horrible lifetime that I had. And I feel like, is that really freaking necessary? You know what I mean? I mean, this was my question for another topic that we're going to discuss, but I don't know. I feel like I'm a very heart-centered person, and I have a lot of compassion, and I wonder also, though, Aaron, that sometimes those lifetimes of poverty do teach us a lot about compassion and empathy. And yeah. So I feel I understand, again, intellectually how that works, but boots on the ground is a totally different story. I don't know that 30 to 50 years of struggle in that way, begging for food and scraps is... I think 5 years is enough.
No, I agree. Well, then what do you think of, because this was in Linda's story, her spirit guide actually had said that money is not to be held on tightly, feared, or blocked. Money is currency that must flow. So what are your thoughts on that?
You know, it's such a hard, money is such a hard topic. I don't think I could ever teach anybody about money, because I'm not a very good representation about money. But I think, again, you have to get at the root of your own belief system. Mm-hmm. Because if you really believe that your whole life is, you live, your reason for being here and working so hard, it's to earn the dime to pay your bills, then it's really hard to change that mentality. I do think that money is it's like an exchange of energy. I really do believe that. But at the same time, I struggle in a personal sense with the whole concept of money, because I think it's just BS. But at the same time, and I know it all has to do with our value system. Yeah. But I, in a very personal sense, it seems as if... I think you just have to look at your own relationship to money. Like, how do you speak about money in your daily life? You know, is it really the root of all evil, or is it the love of money the root of all evil? You know what I mean? I think you have to really kind of do a review for, like, an individual assessment in terms of your own relationship with your beliefs about money. I do believe, yes, everything is an exchange, because there has to be balance. So something is always going out and something is always coming in. I do think that.
Yeah.
However, we are on this planet, Aaron, and we have to save money for a rainy day. So I do think it's not necessarily to be held on too tightly, but I think you do need to be smart.
I agree. I definitely agree with that. You know, we don't want everyone to think, oh, money's going to come, and then they go and spend $10,000. And then they're all of a sudden in the hole. No, that's not what we're saying. But for sure, you know, it definitely has to be managed appropriately. And, you know, I've actually, as you're talking, I kind of remembered how money shifted for me was when the point more so where I needed to figure out, you know, what working was, what money from work was, and, you know, what I wanted to do that I was passionate about. And I was always trying to combine everything together. And I actually had to realize that for me to, like, be happy, it didn't revolve around, you know, specifically the type of work that I did, which I realized, you know, I do have to enjoy work, and it has to be something that, you know, is entertaining for me. And I can't be bored, for sure. I can't be bored. So when I figured that out, and I also realized that, you know, I can have my passions and do what I really enjoy doing outside of work, and then not worry so much about what type of money is coming in. And I just let the universe, I just said, you know what? I want something that I'm going to enjoy doing, and that'll give me enough to get by. And maybe then some to save for the future. That once I started to that mindset and didn't focus on stressing about, I need X amount of dollars, I need this, this, and that. You know, it slowly started to manifest. It wasn't fast. It took a couple, maybe 3 to 4 years for it to manifest. And in those 3 to 4 years, my mindset also started to change in the way I perceive it. But at the same time, I was working my ass off. Let me tell you, like, I had weekend jobs. I was like, you know what? I'm not going out with my friends because I have goals. And, you know, as soon as I started to focus on just the work itself, and growing and shifting my mindset and my belief system, everything else changed for me. So, you know, now I have, you know, good amount of money saved. I'm ready. You know, I'm going to be moving in the next few months. So definitely don't have to worry about that. I have, you know, everything set, they fill in, and it kind of just came into place, and I'm ready for the next step. You know,
I think also, though, for people in general, for example, like you said, if you just focused on your passions, you know, and at least had something left over for, you know, for, I guess, to put into savings or whatever, that would be okay. But I think for other people in general, the struggle is, Aaron, that it looks like in the world, if you follow your passions, for the most part, you can't be successful. You know what I mean? Because it's almost like your passions are less valued, because we obviously value right. certain jobs over others on the planet. So people are less inclined to chase their passion and follow their passion, and then that materialize into a full-time successful position. But I think also that is a state of mentality, but also it is being realistic about the state of the world.
Yeah.
So I think it's definitely a struggle. And I think, and this is something I talk about sometimes to people I know, and I'm trying to learn this lesson myself, is to go for it, regardless of what the money looks like today in your account, is to take the step anyway, because apparently you're not supposed to just wait until the money comes to do what you love. You need to do it first and the money will come. So it's like opposite way that we are taught. But Aaron, I'm going to jump to our
yes.
last topic, because we really only have 10 minutes left, and I wanted to get this topic, yes, addressed. And I wanted to talk about the whole idea on the other side of having a job on the other side through this woman's story. I can't remember if it's which chapter it is, to be honest, in the book. However, this whole section is on spiritual rehabilitation for souls that have been injured during their incarnation on Earth. And I know this is the last topic that we can tackle, because I think I wanted to jump to this one because I think there's so much intrigue in this. And I think people really want to know about the souls who commit atrocities on this yes. planet. What happens to these souls who commit, you know, murder, these serial killers, rapists, just people who commit, you know, these completely dark crimes? What happens to these souls on the other side? So we're going to shift and talk about this briefly. And in this book, there's this story about this woman named Juniper, and she learns through her session that she is a quote unquote a soul doctor on the other side. She helps with what are called displaced souls that, again, have who are like serial killers, murderers, who have essentially kind of lost their connection to God. And so she helps to perform, again, what she calls energetic therapy for these souls on the other side. So I've read a number of books about these spiritual rehab centers for these types of souls, but not only these types of souls. In other books I've read that it's, you know, souls who, you know, people who have committed suicide, people whose souls have kind of just fallen really, really dark, and they go to these places of healing or regeneration of the spirit. However, in this story, she talks about the fact that there are these healing boxes that are, I guess we could call them like rehab boxes that the souls are kind of incubating in and getting that healing and getting that love, unconditional love from these doctors and other spirits on the other side. And she, one of the reasons she keeps continuing to incarnate on the earth is so she can stay connected to humanity and the conditions that we experience and just the dense energy and negative energy of the earth. And the one thing that she also talks about in the story is that when you're on the other side and you're doing your job, but specifically being like a soul doctor, that not everyone is allowed to come to contact with some of these souls. Why do we think that is?
Well, I mean, I can understand that for sure, because, you know, just think of it as going to a prison. You don't want everyone to be in contact with the prisoner. For one, they might corrupt them. Two, they might... who knows, maybe they can damage their soul, you know. That I mean, I don't think I would want to go there. It sounds like they take the, like the worst of the worst. Like, I would assume that. And the one thing it did say too is sometimes the souls stay in those boxes for eternity. Sometimes they're there for hundreds of years, you know. And so I'm like wondering, like, I don't want to go near Hitler, you know, near Mussolini. So I you know, it was really, really weird to read that chapter, just because like I understood it. And at the same time, I also thought it was, you know, pretty interesting how, you know, right as soon as Juniper got back, or her soul got back, she's like, all right, great, let's get back to work. Like, she didn't even, you know, like, think about what it was like on her life, in her recent life. She was just ready to go and didn't even need to do the what is it?
Like a life review.
Past life review, or the life review, exactly. So, you know, she just went right to work. So I'm just like wondering, like, wow, first off, she's passionate. And then second, it's like, these souls, can they even be rehabilitated? Like, it sounded like these were the worst of the worst, you know, like maximum security. And
yes,
you know, and so I was just like, wow, like, I never thought about that as that specific role. I never really thought about it. I knew there's places where souls go to heal for like suicide and, you know, for bad lives. But it's like, the way they described it was that it was, this is where the evil of all evil goes.
Yes, and the most, I think one of the most interesting tidbits coming out of that is that serial killers, when they incarnate into the earth, they do not incarnate with the intent to kill people. So it's really not within the contract to do that. So think about that. Think of the number of serial killers. You don't really hear about female serial killers, so they always tend to be male.
About to say that they specify in there that majority, I think they may have said all of them, but at least the majority of them are male. So it's like, what is going on with that? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's just the male energy, but something happens to these individuals and they get off track and they become fixated on something. And within their mind, it's just like they're susceptible to this type of behavior. And they so when they cross over after their own death, they have to be energetically stabilized again. They have to be healed in some sort of way. But it's definitely, you have to really wonder about what it is that, I don't know, makes them more inclined or more susceptible to that darkness on the planet. I'm not really sure. And it makes me wonder about their blueprint. Like, what were they really intended to be, you know?
Right. No, it makes sense. And you know, I actually just opened the page right now, and it's reminding me of one of the first times I had a reading. I was told that in my earlier lifetimes, like hundreds and hundreds of years ago, like one of the few first times I incarnated, I had done some horrible things, not by choice, but because I was told to do so by like my higher ups, and I had no choice to do that but otherwise I would die. And I was told that it took a long time. I had to go in and go to some sort of rehabilitation, and I wasn't allowed to incarnate again for a very, very long time because of what my soul had done. And I'm actually still now having to pay back that karma for all the lies that I took, or whatever it was that I did. So like it just like sparked right now with me. And you know, for all we know, like each of us could have been there at one point in time. She didn't necessarily say I was a psychopath or anything like that, or a serial killer. It was just, I think it was more so like a mass genocide that my early soul had done. And it wasn't, and even in that life, I hated doing it because it didn't resonate with my soul. But if I didn't do it, like me and I guess my family and people that I loved would have been killed. So
that's so crazy. It's just so crazy to me, because it really just makes me think that not serial killers, but other people are contracted to do, you know, to help participate in the in certain tragedies because it, you know, it is in their contract. And that idea again,
I think you're cutting out here.
Oh, can you hear me?
You cut out a little bit, at least on my end. The storm might be getting the best of you.
Yes, probably. I was just saying that I think it's just food for thought in terms of why certain people commit certain crimes. And it might be within their own blueprint to do so, to teach, you know, they might have a contract with the other family or the other individual to help them learn right. something. Or if it's karmic, I hate saying that because I don't like to believe that. But it is essentially really just food for thought. And it gives you some perspective. But at the same time, we're on the earth and we are of, you know, of the body. And I don't know sometimes that those you know me, I don't think any of the dark experiences are necessary, but
right.
I know they do have their role here. And yes, most of us unfortunately learn through darkness and through pain as opposed to love to a certain extent. But the one other, I know we only have, Aaron, 4 minutes, so I wanted to bring up one last thing about this chapter is the whole idea, and I want us to do a separate episode about this, but I kind of wanted to address it briefly this time.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of her role as a soul doctor, and I told you, this is not the first time I have read about this. I've read this in other stories, that this is an actual job, because we do have jobs on the other side, just not like a 9-to-5, you know, miserable type of life. But the whole idea of being a healer in that way, how do you imagine those jobs are assigned?
I would imagine you have to be an extremely advanced soul for sure. Like, you've had to have had the human experience multiple times and have gone through the, I guess, because there are apparently a set of themes. So you probably have had to have gone through most of the themes, if not all of them, and learned from them and achieved whatever score, whatever level. I don't know how that's ranked and whatnot. You know, who knows what their credentials are. But, you know, I would imagine they would have to have experienced a lot of being human, or at least a lot of being in some sort of incarnation. I don't know exactly what, if there's others, you know, other than human, but it would have to go through some harsh lessons, especially for this one, because, you know, she is a soul doctor. She sees these lost souls as her children. So she cares for them. And she's, you know, as you could tell right away, she's like, let me get back to them. Don't even care about this past life. You know, I learned my lessons. We did good. Let's go. And she just wanted to help them and wanted to heal them. So, I mean, you definitely have to have a lot of compassion for sure as well, you know, at a soul level, because it's hard work. You're dealing with these souls that are, you know, severely, I guess, damaged, you could say.
Yes. And I wondered about that too. There's like two parts to that. I would imagine that you probably had to have come to the earth to learn, like you said, a good portion of lessons just to be able to perform that role and to have that understanding of why a soul would become so dark, like how they could be susceptible to it and then commit the act as well. At the same time though, Aaron, and I told you, I want us to do a separate episode about this because it has been on my mind lately. So when you're on the other side and your soul is in the process of just its, you know, everyday evolution and expansion, do they tell you, okay, so there's, you know, I'm going to sit you down, Aaron, you know, or whatever your universal name is. Do they tell you, hey, so these are the options that we have, jobs available on this side. You can be a healer. You could be a teacher. You can be a guide. You can be, I don't know, a spreader of star seeds. I don't even know what the hell.
right.
You know, any kind of job, right? I wonder, do they give you the option, or just because of the nature of your creation and the nature of your soul, do you naturally gravitate towards one specific type of role and then go through lessons that help you to evolve into that role? I wonder about that.
Right. I mean, that's a good question. Like I actually, until you had, you know, talked about it the other day, I never thought about jobs so much. I just knew we all had them. I never really thought too much about them, but you know, I do want to know, like, what jobs are there other than the ones you just described? What purposes are there? I know people sometimes in readings are like, oh, I'm here to help the kids. I'm here to help lost souls. But like, what, I don't know, I just want to know more about like that life. Like, is it similar to what it's like here in our realm, or is it, you know, much more extravagant? What's the, you know, again, it goes back to, what's the greater purpose? What are the lessons here?
And yeah, I mean, you know? I really wonder about it because, you know, before you incarnate here, I'm sure the options are spread out on the table as well. It's like, okay, Joe, this lifetime, you can either be a trucker, garbage man, handyman, pick one. You know what I mean? Like, right. Is it the same process? I really do wonder about that. But I think that requires that you go back and look through your records, your Akashic records, to see what the common themes have been. You know what I mean? Have I been a teacher in 30 of my lifetimes? Therefore, that would, you know, force me to think that, oh, that's probably what I do or what I'm aiming to be on the other side.
Right. No, that makes sense. And then, do we all aim for the same goal? Do all of the souls have the same goal that we're aiming towards? You know, like that's, or are there different goals?
You see, you know? I I wonder, Aaron, I really wonder about that, because you and I have both spoken very profoundly about the lack of there being an end goal after this whole, you know, shindig. Like,
yeah, I seriously want to get one of these regressions, and that's the question I'm going to have them ask. Like, first thing, forget about any other things I have going on with me. Just what's the end goal, you know?
Yes. It's like, where do we stop? I want to know, like, are we there yet? Are we there yet?
I would love to know that. And then, of course, there's other worlds we incarnate to. So who really knows where? I mean, there could be one that's even harder than Earth, than being human. Ugh. We don't know.
I shudder to think about that. That one can just like implode. And that's
maybe okay. That's what we're evolving to.
Maybe. I really wonder about that, Aaron. But hey, we are going to actually have to stop this episode. We've already hit the hour, and we did not, of course, tackle a quarter of the topics that we intended to today. This book is an amazing book. It's called The Limitless Soul by Brynn Blankenship. She was great to meet in person, and she's been doing this work for quite some time. I know she performs regressions herself, so if you're interested, you can look her up online. And she's created her own hypnotic solutions hypnosis center. And I believe that's in North Carolina as well. Aaron, thank you so much for joining me today. I hope people have found this discussion to be enlightening. I know we were a little bit jumping around sometimes, but it just, you know, forces us to think about all these other unexpected topics. So sorry for all of the distractions. But thank you, Aaron, for joining me today. I really appreciate it. And
you're welcome.
I look forward to continuing more of this conversation. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.